Welcome back here to 790 The Ticket, and welcome to the 1 o'clock hour here on this Football Friday, which is brought to you by Yingling, a beer as bold as those who drink it. Tap into your inner eagle. Yingling, spread your wings. Hoopsville, Pennsylvania, please drink responsibly. Greg Likens alongside Brian Monroe filling in for Zaz and Amber on this Friday. Jennifer with us as well, so we're going to take you up another hour before Hawk and Crowder take over here on the Ticket. Lot to get into. It appears that Brian Flores is just now addressing the media following the Friday practice. So shortly we'll tell you any of the highlights of what he has to say today. Dolphins, of course, a couple days away from taking on the Dallas Cowboys. So we're going to get into more of that. Before we do, though, let's get to our 1 o'clock edition of Headlines.
This is WAXYAM South Miami and WSFSFM HD2 Miramar, a Radio.com sports station.
We'll start on the gridiron, where the Josh Rosen era in Miami will officially begin on Sunday. As according to multiple reports, the Dolphins will start the second-year quarterback in the team's Week 3 matchup with the Cowboys. We are awaiting official word from Flores. We'll tell you when we get that. Ryan Fitzpatrick, of course, started the first two contests of the season, with the offense mustering just 10 total points. The Dolphins also announced that they've claimed defensive end Taco Charlton off of waivers from the Cowboys and waived offensive lineman Brian Witzman. Kickoff between Miami and Dallas is 1 o'clock on Sunday, and you can hear the game on our sister station, 560 The Joe, WQAM. Last night, Thursday Night Football, the Jaguars earned their first win of the season, taking down the Titans 20-7. Jacksonville's defense sacked Marcus Mariota 9 times, and rookie Gardner Minshew threw 2 touchdowns in the victory. From the pros to college, where the Miami Hurricanes host Central Michigan tomorrow, looking to improve to 2-2 on the year. You can hear that game on 560 The Joe, WQAM, with kickoff set for 4 o'clock at Hard Rock Stadium. Finally on the diamond, the Marlins open up a weekend series against the visiting Nationals. Miami is seeking to avoid its 100th loss of the season by sending Robert Duggar to the mound. He'll be opposed by Anibal Sanchez. First pitch is 7:10 from Marlins Park. And one other Marlins note, according to multiple reports, the team will be giving manager Don Mattingly a 2-year contract extension. An official announcement is expected today prior to this evening's game. So those are your headlines. Brian, just taking a look at some of the beat writers who are out there Dolphins training camp in Davie, and I want to pull this up as I'm refreshing my Twitter page here and the timeline. I did see that Cameron Wolf from ESPN had tweeted out that, according to Brian Flores, Taco Charlton wants to play Sunday at Dallas, and it's a possibility, but he noted that it would be, quote, a tough thing to do given he's only had one practice with the team.
Yeah, you got to put him in a special package if you are to say, okay, third down, all you can do is rush. Because you're not going to know their defense.
Correct. Yeah, so that's one of those things where he'd be very limited when it comes to the snap count. Also, just reading some other tweets from Brian Flores about Josh Rosen. Here it is. He says, we liked where Josh was. He had 2 good days of practice. We decided to make the move after practice yesterday. He says, I do think he's ready. He went on to say, obviously, Fitzpatrick was disappointed. If he wasn't disappointed, that would be a bad thing. Flores says the way Fitz has handled the situation has been impressive, said he has really taken Rosen under his wing, and that Flores also said he was asked if Rosen can prove that he's a long-term quarterback here, if that narrows the focus down to this week. And he says, quote, is there a potential for that? Yeah, but when you start to think that far ahead, you lose a little bit of right now, end quote. Flores also on if Rosen will get a clean pocket, quote, I'm confident that we'll get him protected, end quote. So that's what we've heard. And so it matches up. Brian Flores yesterday addressed the media in the morning and said Ryan Fitzpatrick is our quarterback right now. And he wasn't lying, because he said after practice yesterday they made the decision to switch. So I don't know if it matters that much, Brian, in the sense that, you know, reading a little bit about Armando Salguero has written about this over the course of the last few weeks, so during the regular season, Josh Rosen has been getting more reps with the first team than most backup quarterbacks do across the league. And, you know, he's drawing a comparison. One extreme is Peyton Manning when he was in Indy, where literally nobody else got any reps with the first team. He got them all, versus what the Dolphins are doing, where, you know, they've been giving him more reps than is typically customary for a backup quarterback. So it's not like this is completely foreign to him. We've seen him now play in both games already this season for blowout reasons, but I don't think this is going to be too big of an adjustment for him. It's more about the supporting cast and whether they can hold up.
That's it. That's all. It comes simply down, can this offensive line keep him upright? If you ask me today, I'm going to say a strong no. Now, this offensive coordinator can do some things to help out Josh Rosen with that, running some chip blocks, you know, maybe doing some max protection with 6- and 7-man guys, running 2-man routes, 3-man routes, moving the pocket because, you know, Dallas does have a fast-flowing defense. But, yeah, I think, you know, Josh Rosen has shown that he's got the arm strength to make every throw on the field. The real question is he going to throw it to the other team, which he's been accustomed to since he's been in the NFL?
Right, which we're hoping that's not the case, but –
we're hoping that that's the case, and maybe, you know, your running back doesn't just give one to the other team again as a gift. So, again, the supporting cast for both these quarterbacks, they're not set up for success. They're just set up to get through a game. You know, you can't look and tell me, oh, my God, they got all these weapons. Oh, my God, the offense. They don't. They really don't. And if you sit back and say, look at the running back room, you have to say your best running back's on the bench.
Right.
If you're talking about Ballage or Kenyon Drake. And that's the head scratcher because I always wonder, you know, to me, he's good. Kenyon Drake's good. He's not a great running back. He's good, but he can do a lot of things on the field. Why are we gone through 2 coaching staff and he's still on the bench? What's going on? That means something's going on in practice, in the film room.
Right. There's one common denominator.
It is.
And it's him. The question is, what is awry?
Yeah. There? And, yeah. You know, normally with the running back, when you get to the NFL, what keeps a running back off the field is picking up the blitz. Or having pass protection. You know, I learned that from Frank Gore that he is considered the best pass protection running back in the NFL. Frank is not afraid to come and smack you in the mouth. And that's one thing that the young quarter running backs, everywhere he goes, learns from. And that's what coaches always say about him. So for me, is Kenyon not
Kenyon
picking
Drake
up?
Supposedly was supposed to learn that last year, right?
Supposedly.
Him. Yeah.
Supposedly. If he wasn't stubborn enough to say, let me ask for some help, because you never know what guys – when they think they're the man, they might not ask the vet who's playing ahead of them for help. And we've seen that before, and that's the worst thing you can do as a young guy. The best thing you can do is be his shadow. Hey, man, wherever you're going, I'm going. Whatever you do, I'm doing. You going to the bathroom? I'm going to the bathroom too. I mean, legit, I've had friends that played at the game at a high level. A young guy will come in and say, whenever you work out, whenever you study, I'm going to be there. And they became their shadow. And that's how you become a good to great football player. Because the jump from college to the pros is huge because not only are you dealing with grown men, but you're also dealing with guys that all they do is eat, sleep, and football. There is no more classes. This is class. So when it comes to knowing the defense, knowing the offense, these guys know it like the back of their hands. And they will trick you and mess with your mind so much that if you're still in that college lifestyle, oh, yeah, I'm going out. I'm not going to watch any film. You're going to be left behind. And a lot of guys do. And that's the only thing I can think with Kenyon Drake right now. He's not hitting the playbook or he's not picking something up because there's no reason that you shouldn't be getting more touches from 2 different staffs.
Right. Yeah, that's a real mystery, especially – and the funny thing is I said this last year, but I really mean it this year. They don't have any other playmakers.
They have nothing.
Right? Like last year you felt that way to a certain degree, but now we see the way the roster is constructed this year and you get a brand new appreciation for – the lack of talent that's on this team, especially on that side of the ball. So,
and another dude.
I don't get it.
Paging Mike Gesicki. Where's the tight end? Where's the guy that we heard about taking this next step this offseason and preseason, and he's finally going to be that second-round pick and that red zone mismatch that we saw at Penn State? What does he have, a couple catches on the year?
Right. Now, I would say for Drake, for Gesicki, for everybody, part of this is just that the offensive line is so bad.
But that's why your running backs and your tight end should be more involved because they're your outlets. They're your quick game. So if we know we can't have any time to sit back there and do 7-step drops, we got to do quick game. Gesicki, get out there, run a sprint out, turn around. Where's my check down? Kenyon Drake. That's the confusing part. These are the guys that should be more involved. You look at the Patriots. They do an amazing job with their running backs and just flaring them out. Mm-hmm. Tom Brady doesn't have anything. Doop. Guy makes somebody miss and gets 6-7 yards every single time. I want to see that with this team because you're talking about their offensive coordinator coming from the Patriots.
Well, that's the irony.
And we thought we would see the Patriots type offense. Well, there's 2 positions that get used and abused in the Patriots offense. Running backs and that tight end. And right now with the Dolphins, You just don't see it.
You don't at all. So it's making me wonder if perhaps Dan Enos can, you know, just pull double duty.
Hey, right? Listen.
Get him on a plane after the game against Central Michigan and have him call the game for the offense in Dallas.
he couldn't do any worse.
No, he couldn't. You fired everybody up on the text line.
No.
About UCF.
Come on, UCF Knights fans, baby.
We're going to get to those in a little bit. While we're on the topic of the Dolphins, though. So, okay, Rosen's going to have his work cut out for him on Sunday.
Yes.
But at least we are going to see the first opportunity for him to start in a Dolphins uniform. But this gets back to a bigger picture issue that you and I talked about at the beginning of the show. If you're the Miami Dolphins and I guess just let's play along for a second. If we are led to believe what Chris Greer told us on Monday, they never intended to trade Laremy Tunsil, but they ultimately got a deal they felt they couldn't pass up. They certainly weren't in the business of trading Minkah Fitzpatrick, but he demanded out. They couldn't convince him otherwise, and then they decided to get a first-round pick for him. So if you believe that, then I suppose the next part of this we can understand to a certain degree. But in general, once they decided to strip down the roster, you brought this up, I brought this up. I have no idea why they actually traded for Josh Rosen.
I still don't.
So, like, here's the first part of it. You trade for Josh Rosen, then at that point they should say, Rosen's going to be our starter week one. We need to see what we have here. All respect to Ryan Fitzpatrick. We're still paying you $10 million a year, so you should be happy for that. With Rosen, they get him here, and they're like, nope, he's got to compete for the job. And then all along it's felt like Brian Flores has wanted Fitzpatrick to win the job and has leaned in his direction, even though during the preseason there wasn't like he was demonstrably better. So that all has seemed flawed on its own. Then right before the season starts, when they strip away all the talent on this roster, and it's clear this is a tank job, at that juncture it's like, well, why on earth would you need a Josh Rosen on this team anyway when it's clear that you've set up to draft your quarterback in 2020? So you're setting up also a scenario in which you're going to draft his replacement, just like Kyler Murray was drafted in Arizona. So history repeating itself. Brian, I know that speaks volumes to what they feel about Josh Rosen. So the bottom line is, did they figure that out once he got here? Or did they kind of already know that? They still gave up the second round pick for him. And now we're sitting here with a quarterback who is going into a game where he has no chance to succeed. And he's not even part of the future anyway, which begs the question, why not just keep the second round pick?
Well, you know, probably like a lot of coaches in the NFL, they got a little bit of ego on their side and saying, you know what? I can make that guy great. You know what? He didn't have the best offensive line over there. He didn't have the best tools. But you know what? In our system, he'll be successful. Unfortunately, when Josh Rosen got here and he got the playbook, and Coach O'Shea was like, okay, read back this play for me. Trips right.
Where's the linebacker?
Where does the linebacker? Am I supposed to call that out or is the center supposed to call that out? No, you're supposed to call. Oh, he hasn't done that either. All right, well, this is going to take forever. And that's the reason why initially I didn't think Rosen would be the day one starter. Not because he doesn't have better tools than Ryan Fitzpatrick. We know that because he was a first-round pick. It's just because he's not going to understand the playbook fast enough to pick everything up. Can you say a play in the huddle? That takes a lot because some of these plays take 10 seconds to regurgitate in the huddle. Now, this is where all the young guys get tripped up. Defensive coordinator has been doing these for years, and they're going to mess with your mind. I'm going to show you one thing. I'm going to show you man. Then all of a sudden, I'm going to go to a zone coverage. Looks like I'm rushing four. I'm only going to rush two, and I'll drop into a zone. I just thought it would take him a little bit longer than Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's been in the league 15 years, seen every single defense, to pick up the playbook and understand defenses. That's why I've said, okay, you'd probably start after the bye week. Mm-hmm. Let Fitzpatrick go through this gauntlet of four hard games, and once he actually understands the playbook, we put him in. Well, the only thing that I can say is that he actually studied. He took the time, he watched the extra film, and he progressed on the field. Because if you listen to some of the interviews Flores said at training camp, he was light years way behind him when it came to understanding an offense and defense. That's the only reason I can say he's now, you know, thrusted into the starting position. But also, did you watch the last two games? Can't get any worse.
Not at all.
It can't get any worse.
Well, that's why I didn't know why they waited so long to get him into the game as it was against
the Patriots.
I just
don't think he knows it. I don't think he knows the game because the biggest thing when it comes to NFL players that you'll hear one word when a coach says why he put this or why he brought this guy in for a workout or signed him, trust. Can I trust you to know everything? I just don't think the coaches trust him yet when it came to picking up certain blitzes, coverages, because I don't remember if it's the first or second preseason game, Rosen actually changed the protection into the blitz strength, and they ran into it. So something as little as that will get you sat on the bench, because now I can't even execute the offense because now you're rolling into the blitz strength instead of changing it to a pass or a quick game. That's the only thing that I can say is that he's finally understanding the defenses and picking up the little things.
Which you like to hear in one sense. At the same time, you know, Lewis Riddick brought this up on ESPN this morning. He tweeted about it last night, is that they're basically setting him up.
Oh, he's upsetting for failure. Oh, for sure.
For failure. And there's no chance he has to succeed, as you've been mentioning. So, you know, when people nationally are seeing that, and, you know, part of me feels bad for him in the sense that, and a lot of the other players on this team, right, that are being set up to not have success in the NFL. The other part of it is like, well, they're getting paid a lot of money. And, you know, there's only a certain number of people that have the ability and privilege to play this game and make the type of money they do. So, you know, you can make the argument there's about 20 guys on this roster that may not be on an NFL roster right now if the Dolphins weren't going about this in the way that they are. So I can see both sides of it. But generally speaking, what I always come back to is Josh Rosen or otherwise, as we're talking about on the football field, I feel bad for the fans.
Yeah.
And it's not a home game this weekend. I get it. You're going to Dallas. But for the fans, in one sense, you get to see Josh Rosen. People have been clamoring for that. But when they return home next week against the Chargers, here's the thing. Where the tank, you know, for everybody who's now on board with the tank, that's fine. That's your prerogative. But for others that can look at this a little more critically and say, you know, we don't have to support all aspects of this, which is, that's where I am. I know that's you're the same way with some of the players they've gotten rid of. The point is this. No matter what they do, they're not going into the season, one, being transparent about it outside of just what their actions are, and two, it's not like they're doing it and then they're saying, guess what? The concessions are going to be cheaper. The tickets are going to be cheaper. We know it's going to be a rough go, but we're going to meet you halfway. If that was the case, then I'd be like, you know what? It may be painful, but the Dolphins are at least doing their part. In this case, it never happens. Dolphins are otherwise. I'm not just trying to, you know, pigeonhole the Dolphins here. But any of these teams that are going to go through a rebuilding process, they don't suddenly cut the fans a break in that regard, right? And how many fans do you think bought, they're like looking at this roster like, man, I think Tunzel will be on the team for a while. Minkah Fitzpatrick will be on the team for a while. And heck, Fitzpatrick made it to the regular season, probably bought merchandise, bought jerseys, and now they're looking like, hey, can I exchange this? What the hell's going on here?
I did see a tweet where a father and son bought matching Fitzpatrick jerseys.
And not
the week,
Ryan,
the
right?
week before that he got traded.
Not Ryan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, honestly, I know it happens a lot with soccer jerseys. Like, I don't want no names on there. I don't want no numbers. I want a blank jersey in the back. You don't really see that too much with football jerseys, right? Everybody always gets a name. And I always tell people, don't do it. Just put your own name back there or nothing. Because if you're a fan of a team and not a player, more than likely that guy is going to be gone. And now what are you going to do with this jersey? Unless he's a great player that retires after 10 years, then it can be considered vintage. But if you get a guy and 3 years later he's gone, you still going to rock that jersey? Like, when I see the Tannehill jerseys, I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I would rock that one still. I really don't.
No.
No.
You got to give that more time.
Yeah.
And even then, I don't think
I wouldn't. No. Definitely not.
Yeah. I'm with you. There's some that, you know, like they end up being good players, and you can say they're throwbacks.
Cool. Listen, if you got a Jason Taylor or Zach Thomas, great.
You're good to go.
Vintage. Those are great jerseys right there. But if you got a Ryan Tannehill, you know, Minkah Fitzpatrick now, it's like, yeah. So how about those apples, huh?
That's rough.
What you going to do about that?
All right, I mentioned you got everybody stirred up on
no,
the text
line. No, I didn't.
Line.
Come on.
A lot of UCF fans, I would imagine.
You know, the truth hurts.
So when we come back, I want to read those. 67974, Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. Greg Likens, Brian Monroe, in for Zaz and Amber. Stay tuned here on 79 of the Ticket. Join Tobin for a Yuengling football watch party at Sports Grill Kendall, 9090 Southwest 97th Avenue on Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m. He'll be registering everyone for the chance to win a big screen TV, letting you spin the wheel and giving out prizes again. Tobin at a Yuengling football watch party at Sports Grill Kendall, registering you to win a big screen TV Sunday from 1 to 3 o'clock. Welcome back here to 790 The Ticket. Greg Likens alongside Brian Monroe in for Zaz and Amber as we continue on this Football Friday. Coming up in a half an hour, Hawk and Crowder will be here. So Looking forward to hearing that on our way out of here. It's a little rainy where we are in Miami. So I've learned, though, listening to some of the weather reports around here that and knowing what it's like in South Florida, that it could be very sunny somewhere else in our listening range. So I'll just say in right outside the station.
Yeah, right here.
It's looking a little rainy, but that's not going to dampen the weekend as we have reached it, right? Football Friday, got a big slate this weekend. Got the Canes, Dolphins in action.
I love it.
And UCF's in action as well. You've stirred up those Knights fans.
Man, I'm telling you, truth hurts sometimes.
Via the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line, 67974. 67974 is how you reach us. So I'm going to read this verbatim. Somebody had texted earlier in to you and said, hey, who has Miami beaten recently, right?
Mm.
And you said, well, a couple of years ago, they beat the number two team in the country, Notre Dame. And they wrote back, this year, moron, who have the Canes beaten this year?
You didn't say this year. You said recently. I'm supposed to read between the lines there, moron? Good one, though.
Somebody says the—
well, let me ask you a question. Who's Stanford beating this? I mean, who's UCF beating this year? You're saying Stanford's your big win? A 1-2 team? Hold on. Let me get you for a second. Congratulations.
Give them the slow clap.
Slow clap.
Somebody else says the ACC is just as bad as the American.
Oh, come on now. Come on now.
The reigning national champs come from the
American? Come on now. Are you kidding me? Come on. Come on. Yeah, it's a down year. It is. And you still got North Carolina beating SEC South Carolina. You're right. And the reigning champs from there. But, yeah, you're right. The ACC. Yeah, you sure? Mm.
Another texter says the Canes won't play UCF for fear of losing the recruiting battle.
We've already played y'all. We have already scheduled you. And we went to your home. What are you talking about? Please. Enlighten me on that one again. Come on, man. Get out of here with that.
Somebody else says, hey, Monroe, in 2017, UM lost to Pitt. UCF killed Pitt that same year.
Congratulations. Anything else? Congrats.
Another one says, Monroe, Rashad, and Duarte love to come at UCF. They position themselves as heels to UCF fans.
You know why? Because we get this type of response. And it's great. Talking points. I love it. I mean, I love it. I really do.
Now this is UCF is the new Boise State. LOL.
If they were.
Except they're not scheduling.
Exactly. If they were, I would give them the props. If they did what Boise State did and went anywhere and played anyone, which I would love to give them because they're a Florida school. I love some of the players they have. I told them at the beginning of the year, Wimbush was not going to be your guy because he's going to turn the ball over. Then I got killed on the line for that one. Oh, you're a hater, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, I've watched him play. He is not going to be your quarterback. I don't know who the backup is at the time. I didn't know they had this Hawaiian kid, but I've watched him play, especially when he was at Notre Dame and it was down here and we destroyed them. Oof. He will turn the ball over. And sure enough, he lasted, what, a whole game for you guys? It's not me hating. It's just facts. I just hope that, and I would love to see them play some bigger teams, some giants, and beat them. Then you have the argument of going to the college football playoff, but I'm just letting you know the eyes of the committee, all they do is look at the schedule and say, okay, if we took a one-loss SEC team and put them in the UCF schedule, what happens? Okay, now if we took UCF and put it out and they played Alabama, Texas A&M, LSU, Georgia in the same year, what happens? That's all I'm trying to say. You have to get that schedule right to be in that conversation.
Another texter says they should just make a Florida conference. All the Florida schools in the same conference.
That'll work. That'll work. I'm down.
I'm guessing that FIU and FAU would like that, right?
Of course.
That would elevate their status, to be sure.
What we got? FIU, FAU, South Florida, Bethune-Cookman, FAMU, UCF.
Are we putting all those schools in there?
Well, yeah, we got to have a real conference. So UCF, Florida, Florida State, Miami. There you go. It's eight teams, right? Break it down. 4-4. We good.
Okay. That would be interesting.
That'd be interesting. Hey, recruiting would be great.
That'd be fun. Every game would be recruiting.
And recruiting, I mean, and then fan bases. That's the one thing I love playing, like, the Florida schools, because the fan bases actually get to talk trash. I mean, you actually get the fun lead up to it, not like, hey, in 5 years, we'll see you guys later. Like, no, that's not fun, man. I like talking trash.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's healthy for all the schools.
There's nothing wrong with it as long as people don't get sensitive.
Right.
If you're getting sensitive, I can't talk with you. Please, you just, come on, grow up.
We got another take on this. It says North Carolina taking a 1-for-2 with UCF has got to be thought of as a way to send their fan base on a Disney trip where UNC also plays football.
I mean, I ain't saying nothing on that one. I'm just, you guys could take it what you want, UCF.
Somebody else says, when you say SEC schools, can you also only talk about the 3 to 4 good teams? Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Tennessee, Vandy are all terrible.
That's why I only named four. And that's why I said the West. I did say the West.
You did
I don't
say the West.
I don't give no respect to the East because, yes, you got Georgia, but if you look at Georgia before these 3 years, they were decent, but they weren't a power. Then you got Florida, who for the past 6 years has been decent, but they also have 2 4-win seasons, and Tennessee's been trash. Kentucky's finally got up there, but it's still not a power. That West is brutal. That West is no joke.
It really is.
I feel sorry for them dudes out there. And then you get Jimbo out there, and now it's make Texas A&M a team? Alabama, Auburn, LSU, Texas A&M? That's a healthy schedule right there, just those four teams.
Another texter says, would schools pay UCF for real for those games? That being said, I do think UCF should bite the bullet and take some 2-for-1s.
Of course they're going to pay them. The Georgia State got paid $1 million to go to Tennessee and win. Hey, UCF, I know, I think one of the UCF fans wrote into me that saying that we would lose $2.5 million if we don't have a home game. Okay, well, if you take a couple away games at $1 million, still making some money. And then if you actually beat that team and make it to the college football playoff, ching, bonuses, your money's going to be right there.
We got a lot of Dolphins-related text messages coming in as well. We were talking about that last segment. Now, somebody says, don't be silly. No one's buying season tickets based on Tunsil being on the team. Here's my point, is that the timing of this is what is imperative. Because if Tunsil and Micah Fitzpatrick were traded earlier in the offseason, then people are well aware, okay, yeah, we realize they're stripping this thing down. The way it was sold to the fans was that, no, we're not tanking. Remember those reports
exactly.
Came out like in February,
yes.
January, February, nationally and locally, and the Dolphins are denying it. And then as the offseason has progressed, it's like, okay, you get rid of Tannehill, thought that was going to happen. You get rid of Robert Quinn, who's going to face his former team with the Cowboys. You understand that. Cam Wake, you let go in free agency. All that makes sense. You get to a training camp, and you get through the preseason, and you still have, you know, Kiko Alonso on the roster. You still have, you know, not to a very, 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 very lesser degree, you know, a Vincent Taylor, but guys that you feel are going to be around. But then the moment you trade Laremy Tunsil, right, you know, the week of the regular season opening up, and Kenny Stills in that deal, and then Alonso was traded, and then, of course, this Micah Fitzpatrick trade, that all happens after everybody already has their season tickets.
Exactly.
That's my point. So it's not like Tunsil specifically, but it's the idea that, okay, you do have some building blocks for the future. If I buy season tickets, I feel like I'm watching some of these younger players develop and will be part of a team that will prosper in the next couple of years if we believe in the plan. That's my point. It's not like, oh, man, they drafted Laremy Tunsil. Now I got to buy season tickets. It's more of the entire process as a whole when you're looking at it. So
yeah, because it at least gives you hope, right? Oh, we can be competitive. We might not be that good this year, top to bottom of the roster, but we'll be competitive. You know what? I'm going to get my season tickets. But if you said this before that Tunsil, Kenny Stills, Kiko Alonso, Minka Fitzpatrick, and Vincent Taylor, who's the shocker to me since he's young and he's cheap and he's one of your better interior linemen, all gone? I'm willing to bet 25% of people that bought season tickets would be like, yeah, I'm going to wait.
Yeah,
I'm going to wait till we get all those first-round picks next year and see who we get on the field. Maybe we get two out there and it's a little more exciting. I'll save my couple $1,000s, or some of these people that go up into the high thousands to buy boxes and everything else, I'm going to wait this year. You know what? Because the product on the field is not going to be enjoyable. It's not going to be competitive. We're going to get blown out because we don't have a left tackle. We don't have this. But before, you could at least have hope.
Right.
Hey, Laremy Tunsil in the preseason showed that the offensive line would look decent if he's in there. Okay, we got our guy that scored 24 touchdowns over the last 2 years. We got a big play receiver. Jakeem Grant, Albert Wilson comes back. We got some dudes on defense. We got some guys. We'll be competitive. After that, you can't be competitive.
No, not at all.
So I'm with you on that. I feel you on that.
Right, because you're making, as a fan, you're making an educated decision,
yeah,
based on what the prospect is of the team. I don't think anybody signed up for a Laremy Tunsil-less team or Micah Fitzpatrick-less team, all of that. Now, you brought up the idea of the jerseys, right?
Yeah.
For fans. Somebody says, literally the only jersey I own is Dan Marino's.
There you go.
Can't go wrong with that. Another one says the Dolphins should make all of their jerseys with removable Velcro names at this point. point.
That's not a bad idea.
Another one says, never ever put your own last name on your jersey. Biggest bad move ever. That's a little questionable, right?
It's a little weird.
Another says, I still rock my Ricky Williams jersey on Sundays. I love that dude. Another says, I bought my son for Christmas a Cam Wake jersey. He still rocks it. Yeah, both of those.
Cam Wake is cool.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Another says, agreed with you, Monroe. My jerseys are my name, Jason Taylor, Zach Thomas, Dan Marino, Ricky Williams.
You can't beat that. Those are guys right there that you go to the game, no problem. No one's going to look at you crazy.
Somebody else says, I still have Chris Chambers and Ronnie Brown jerseys. Yeah, like those are cool too.
Yeah.
Like they were productive players for the Miami Dolphins when they were on the field. Chris Chambers was a very good player. Ronnie Brown was
created the Wildcat. I mean, come on.
Was really good as well. So it's like that all makes sense. But you do notice that you've got to harken back to days that are either like much earlier this century.
It is. It's true.
Yeah. Rather than current players that are on the team. So a lot of people saying they have Ricky Williams jerseys. A ton of people talking about Ricky Williams. He is still a massive fan favorite all these years later. And despite.
Because he was real.
Right. But and despite the rocky relationship he had with the organization and all that played out.
Yeah, but he was real. Like my man said, straight up, I smoke weed, baby. So you know what? Who's listening? Like, man, that's my guy right there. I'm getting your jersey. I'm going to smoke with you. We cool. He was just real. That's why, you know, people respect honest and real dudes. Like, he's like me. I can relate to him. Mm-hmm. He smokes weed. I smoke weed. I might not be as big and fast as him, but you know what we do? We smoke weed together. Done. I don't smoke weed, but I can see where fans are like, I like that dude because he's real.
I can see that as well. At the same time, I look back at Ricky Williams and just such an odd saga that whole thing was.
It was weird.
It was. I remember exactly where I was. I was driving down. I'd gone up to Gainesville, actually, because I had friends from high school who went to school there to visit. They were taking a fifth year of classes. I had just graduated from college, but I went up there because I went to see a football game. Never seen a football game in the Swamp.
Did you wear your jorts?
And guess who they're no, but oh. guess who they were playing? Ironically, UCF that weekend. but I was driving back, right? And it's pretty late on. I don't know what day it was, but I was driving back, and I heard in the on the radio. I think that's when it was. It was either that or it was another trip. But either way, I was driving in Florida.
Yeah.
And late night on the sports talk radio, I flip it on, and all of a sudden I hear, yeah. By the way, you know, it was on like a national show, and they're doing like their headlines. They're like. Ricky Williams announced his retirement today in other news. And I was like, wait, what? What? The whole offense is Ricky Williams.
That's it.
But anyway. All right, we got time for one more segment, Brian, before we turn things over to Hawk and Crowder. We'll read some more of your text messages and wrap up the show next here on 790 The Ticket. The Ticket wants to help save dogs as we're sponsoring the second annual Raising for the Rescue's benefit concert. The big show is happening at Revolution Live tomorrow night from 6 to 11 p.m. There's an epidemic of homeless dogs throughout South Florida, and we're raising much-needed funding for 100-plus abandoned dogs of Everglades to continue their mission. So come out to the concert on Saturday night. Great music, food trucks, a silent auction, and more, and help save the dogs. That's the second annual Raising for the Rescue's benefit concert happening at Revolution Live on Saturday night at 6. We're back here on 790. Greg Likens, Brian Monroe in for Zaz and Amber. Final segment here on this Football Friday is Hawk and Crowder waiting in the wings. Man, we got a lot of jerseys now people are telling us they have. People say they got a Ray Finkel jersey. They rock
Ray
for the
Finkel,
Dolphins.
Baby.
Larry Zonka and Bob Greasy jerseys. We're going all different eras of Dolphins football that people are bringing up.
But if you think about it, in the last 10 years, it's really only one jersey that you can have that people will still respect. Cam Wake.
Yeah.
That's it. Other than that, you say some of the first round picks and they're like, yeah. You got DeAndre Jordan? What's his name?
Deion Jordan.
Deion Jordan jersey. Yeah, how'd that work out? Yes, number 3 overall pick. We traded up for him. He gone.
Yeah, I guess that maybe. Well, people like the Jarvis Landry was good. Rashad Jones, maybe. I mean, it's still in an era of football in which there was just, you know, widespread mediocrity for the organization. But
I don't know. Jarvis Landry just rubs me the wrong way in certain situations. Like, I feel like a lot of Dolphins fans kind of just have a, reaction when you say his name.
Well, here's the thing that I feel like the organization has brainwashed the fans. This is my personal opinion. So, like, there's a bunch of fans now that just are fully on board with the tank, and they're always going to be fully on board with whatever the team does,
yeah.
No matter what. So, like, Jarvis Landry, a good example, second-round pick, outplays where he was selected, and then when it comes time to pay him, the team's like, no, we're going to ship you out of town, and then they make it seem like he's a bad presence in the locker room. Jay Ajayi was a fifth-round pick. He goes to a Pro Bowl. He doesn't even get to the second season after the Pro Bowl, and they ship him out of town.
They shipped him for the right reasons.
But there's many examples, is my point.
I heard from some people that I know his knees were the reason they left him out, but they never got him public. That's why he's still not in the league.
Well, that was his rep when they drafted him.
Yeah.
I mean, we knew that when he was coming out of Boise State. I guess my point is that there have been a lot of players along the way that, you know, during their times they've been productive, and then for various reasons, the Dolphins get rid of him. They don't sign him to the second contract even after drafting him. And then the fans are like, oh, yeah, that guy was garbage.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I don't think he was garbage. It's just the Dolphins either decided to move on, and maybe there's valid reasons for it. And in other cases, I don't think there were valid reasons for it.
Yeah. Lamar Miller, Olivier Vernon, like two guys that are still playing at a high level right now. I mean, you know, Lamar got injured, but last year he was in the top 10 in rushing at one point. Like, he's a very productive back, and Olivier still is – a high outside linebacker, depending on the scheme that they're running. But I'm with you. Listen, that's what I always tell about Dolphins fans. I go, it starts with your front office. Through the years that I've followed, you know, Dolphins football, whatever, it's about the guys they don't want to re-sign, or it's about the picks that they've made. Like, there's some head-scratcher moves sometimes. Like, you pick a Ted Ginn at the ninth pick. Now, Ted Ginn has been a very productive receiver in this league.
Mm-hmm.
He just wasn't a top 10 receiver coming out. You know, you can thank Devin Hester, I don't care what you say, for being a top 10 pick, because everybody looked at him as the next Devin Hester, and Devin Hester was a rookie the year before and what he did for the Bears. So the Dolphins were like, ooh, we're going to get Devin Hester. We're going to get some return yards. Nope, you didn't. Oh, yeah, by the way, you guys could have picked up Devin Hester the draft before, like in the second round.
Just remember, they got Ted Ginn and his family, according to Cam Cameron. So, you know, it's all good.
That's all great. That's what we want.
All right, so big win for the Canes tomorrow. We feel good about that.
Oh, yeah, that's not even worth debatable. We need to talk about the other three teams that are playing from the Florida schools that they're not going to be not easy games. I think from Florida State and UCF, I think those are the more competitive games, because Florida is breaking in a new quarterback, even though he did show that he can run their offense. Tennessee is coming in. It's a rivalry. As much as Tennessee sucked the last 4 to 5 years, still could be close. Florida State's playing a Louisville team that could easily be undefeated, because they couldn't tackle for anything when they played the game against Notre Dame. Other than that, they were in the game the whole time. And one thing Florida State cannot do, is fit the run. And what that means is their linebackers don't know how to come up and fill and tackle somebody. You look at them, you're like, yo, how do you guys not even know to do the most basic thing? They also lose one of their best defensive ends, 6'7", Joshua, I don't pronounce his last name, to an injury. He's out the whole year. They just took their 5-star safety and looked at the depth chart. Now he's playing defensive end, outside linebacker. So we got to see what's going to happen here. I think Scott Satterfield has done an amazing job with that offense already at Louisville. That's a game to watch. And then the trap game, baby. UCF Knights going to Pitt. You better watch out, Knight fans. If y'all lose, do not tune into this, any of my shows next week. Don't tune in, because it's going down.
You've been warned.
And by the way, if you don't blow them out, don't tune in either. Don't even tune in if you don't blow them out.
There you go. Brian, that's going to do it for us. We've had a fun 4 hours. We assume Zaz and Amber will be back on Monday.
But
if not, maybe they'll give us a call once again. We got Hawk and Crowder waiting in the wings. They're ready to go. Big thanks to Nick Costas, who joined us earlier. Jennifer, great job to work with you. A reminder, Brian will be on the Miami Hurricanes pregame show tomorrow at noon on 560 The Joe WQAM. I'll be opposing you on this very station from 12 to 3, talking all sports, so you can listen there as well. But everybody, have a great weekend. Hawk and Crowder coming up next.